Mind your peas and carrots.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Packaged food giant Pinnacle Brands has its eye on Bird's Eye. The Wall Street Journal reports Pinnacle will pay more than $1.3 billion for the frozen food company. Marketplace's Elisa Roth joins us live from our New York bureau to talk about this deal. Good morning, Elisa.
Good morning.
So what does Pinnacle see in Bird's Eye?
Frozen vegetables. Mm. Lots of them. Bird's Eye is the biggest frozen vegetable company in the U.S. It has about a quarter of the market. And Walmart, Kroger, all the big supermarkets carry them. Now, all those frozen vegetables fit very nicely with Pinnacle's portfolio, especially Swanson Frozen Dinners. But Pinnacle also makes tons of other packaged foods. Duncan Hines is there, so are Mrs. Paul's Fish Sticks, Armor Star Vienna Sausages. And both companies are owned by private equity firms. So if this deal ends up going through, it's a private equity to private equity deal.
And what's the significance of that?
The biggest thing is that private equity firms haven't been doing a lot of buying lately. So if this deal goes through, it could mean that private equity is really ready to make deals again. The other thing is we don't know the details of the transaction yet, but it does sound like Pinnacle will borrow money so it can pay cash for Bird's Eye. And if that's true, it suggests the credit market is starting to open up a bit, which would be a really good thing. This would also be a good deal for Bird's Eye because it has about $700 million in debt. Last month, it told the SEC it would like to raise money through an IPO to help pay off some of that debt. And if it gets bought up, it wouldn't have to worry about that.
All right. Marketplace's Elisa Roth from our bureau in New York this morning. Elisa, thanks.
You're welcome.
Investors are a little chilly today. The selling has sped up in Europe. What had been modest losses are growing by the minute over there. Markets are off now by a percent or just under a percent. In Asia, stocks were mostly lower today, except for the Chinese benchmark, which rose again. No Zoom yesterday for Wall Street. There's concern among investors about the strength of the economic recovery. The S&P was off just by a little, some change. The NASDAQ was off by a half a percent, and the Dow closed down 11 points at 10,426. Sears Holding today said it lost money again. It's the second consecutive quarter they reported a loss. Health insurer Aetna says it's cutting jobs, about 2% of its workforce, 625 employees. It also says more cuts are ahead because of the possible impact of health care reform. Barnes & Noble wants to avoid a potential hostile takeover, so the Booksellers Board has come up with a poison pill, protecting the company in case an investor buys 20% or more of its stock. And billionaire Ronald Burkle's almost there. He's been gobbling up millions of shares. For those on the outside, the question is, with sales of books down, why invest in a dwindling market? Here's Marketplace's Jeff Tyler.
Some see bookstores as an endangered species, a doomed industry.
It may be a doomed industry, but at the same time, if you're one of the top players in a doomed industry, it may not be so bad.
That's David Carnoy, executive editor at the technology website CNET. He says the book retailer has an edge over rivals like Borders because Barnes & Noble has developed its own electronic book reader.
If they can make this transition to e-books and make it more profitable to produce books, that will certainly help.
It's helped Amazon, where sales of the Kindle have taken off. Carnoy says consumers want more competition in the e-book market, which is good for Barnes & Noble. Its e-book reader is called the Nook. Shipments have been delayed, but the Nook is expected to be on store shelves in time for the holiday shopping season. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Fund, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
Airline alliances are a big deal. For the airlines, it's a way to make money, and for passengers, as a convenience. Look at the case of Japan Airlines. It's teetering on the brink of bankruptcy. Oddly enough, potential saviors are right here in the United States, which got us thinking, are partnerships becoming more and more important in airline deals? Here's Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson.
Right now, Japan Airlines, or JAL for short, is part of American Airlines' One World Alliance. That means Americans' customers can buy one ticket and connect on a JAL flight and vice versa. These days, almost every big airline is part of a similar partnership.
If you want to be a global airline, you have to fly to where your customers want to go, and an alliance is a much cheaper way to be able to expand your network.
Jim Corridor is an airline analyst with Standard & Poor's. He says alliances are great for attracting business travelers, the ones who pay full price for a seat at the front of the plane. They also reduce competition, but there are risks.
If your alliance partner defects, suddenly you're left high and dry without a strong presence in a market.
That's the dilemma American Airlines faces as Delta tries to woo JAL from oneworld to the SkyTeam. The winner won't just be able to market itself as a strong player in Asia. Seth Kaplan of Airline Weekly says these partnerships also help airlines save money.
So Delta and Air France, for example, who have their joint venture, across the Atlantic, they're able to say, you know what? Maybe we each used to have two flights between New York and Paris, but maybe we don't need a total of four flights. Maybe we only need a total of three flights to really match the capacity to demand.
And he says they can coordinate the schedules of those three flights so customers can connect to short-haul flights on either end. Do customers end up paying more? Probably not, according to Kaplan. He says airline tickets are about as cheap as they've ever been. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
And finally, some people in this economy have something to smile about. Actually, maybe they shouldn't smile because they're probably without some of their teeth. Gold topped $1,140 an ounce this week. It's eased back a bit, but suffice it to say the value of the yellow commodity's really taken off. So people are cashing in with what they have. In Hannibal, Missouri, for example, the owner of Crescent Jewelry says customers are coming in every day trying to get money for their fillings and their bridges. Some of them even have real teeth attached. We await your biting comments. Check us out online at marketplace.org. Share your thoughts with us. Of course, our online host and blogger, Scott Jagow, is there as well. Inside marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.